You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Tuesday, 21 January. We have got UK unemployment data later this morning. Expected, no change, 4.3%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, Kieran Whitten from Anchor. Touch on the TSMC results, which by a glance from me looked really epic. And then if we've got a moment, some US bank earnings. Christo DeWitt from Luno. Meme coins, they get listed on Ether or Solana. I need to understand all of this. And then Sydney Fletcher from Tax Consulting SA. SARS cracking down on trust tax defaulters. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines from MoneyWeb. Department of Transport plans to hit motorists in their pockets to improve driver behavior, but minister's comment casts doubt over the implementation of Auto's demerit points system. Business day, finance minister at Davos essays focus on reforms, not ratings. Minister says give or take 2 years when asked how long it could take South Africa to regain an investment grade rating. Morning markets at US was closed last night for Martin Luther King Jr. Day. In the East, mostly green. Sydney's up 0.5%. Tokyo up 1.3%. Hong Kong up 1.1%, while Tencent is off 0.4%. Commodities flat to red. Gold is unchanged, 2,744. Brent at 80.20. Platinum unchanged at 964. Palladium down at 952. The Rand 18.58. Bitcoin 102,800. Top 40 opening call. Red open expected, but 210 points or 0.25% lower.
MoneyWeb Now. On the Money. Also available on podcast.
Jenny and I with Kieran Whitten. You find him, of course, at Anchor. Kieran, appreciate the time. TSMC, it was our fourth quarter results that came out, so also gives us the full year. My sense is, I mean, just looking, a really, really good set of numbers from the Taiwanese chip manufacturer.
Good morning, Simon, and good morning to all the viewers. And yeah, like you've said, TSMC smashed expectations with a record-breaking quarter. $26 billion, which, like I said, is the most they've ever reported for a quarter in revenue. And it's largely due to surging demand for their AI chips, as well as high-performance computing that largely drove this growth. AI-related revenue tripled in 2024. And I think it's just important to remember that TSMC, their chips power products from Apple and NVIDIA, which, of course, are behemoths in the tech world. And we're expecting AI adoption to continue to skyrocket this year. And it does, however, look like there may be some increased competition in the chip space. There's now rumors of Microsoft and Alphabet looking to develop their own chips to catch up to NVIDIA, or at least to make good enough chips to diversify away a bit. But ultimately for TSMC, it actually doesn't matter who the industry uses, as they are the clear winner in their node of the chip supply chain and, as I said, supply most of the big players. And I think another, there's been murmurs which suggest it's not all smooth sailing because there are, of course, the uncertainties around the US-China tech conflict that threatens to disrupt supply chains, especially now that Trump is officially in office. And this could present some challenges to chip sales this year. But the forecast suggests another strong year, and I don't think this is actually going to overly impact TSMC, but they are taking a proactive approach and looking to build fabs in Germany, the US, and Japan. And after a very strong year, we think that AI is going to keep on driving this industry forward, and we've actually been adding TSMC to our portfolios at the start of this year.
Yeah, and I was looking at it, and also on valuations, you know, it's not expensive, notwithstanding a massive quarter. I mean, the stock's been doing well, but it's not massively expensive. Let's change track slightly. U.S. bank earnings, we've got those coming through. And I usually look at the like of J.P. Morgan and the really, really biggies. They typically knock it out the park. Your quick take on the U.S. bank earnings?
Yeah, Simon. So also very positive results. The first week of earnings, of quarterly earnings, is obviously very busy with all the major U.S. banks reporting. And it was very encouraging, especially on the outlooks. Every single management team spoke about post-election optimism and excitement to deal with the pro-growth agenda. Mm-hmm. And this pickup in optimism is going to be feeding through into promising M&A pipelines. Less antitrust appeals will, of course, be good for M&A. And it looks like investment bankers in the U.S. are in for a proper year. And the U.S. consumer does remain in decent shape overall and has been one of the tailwinds driving markets in the past week. But I think generally the story here is that regulatory requirements are expected to loosen. Mm-hmm. And this should support future buybacks. We saw Citi buying back a large portion of their market cap, and allow the loosening of the Basel III restrictions could allow banks to more flexibly allocate capital. Like I said, it's a major theme in the U.S. banking industry, and it doesn't bode well for banks in the U.K. and Europe. And I think regulators should start to look at how they can loosen regulatory policy that side as well, because it's last week confirmed that the U.S. banks do remain a very good place to make money for now.
Yeah, and I like your point you make there. There's a disconnect between sort of lower regulation in the U.S., higher regulation in Europe and the U.K., and that is going to see things swing towards the U.S. banks. We'll leave it there. Kieran Whitten, anchor, always appreciate the early morning insights. Give your money the return it wants without taking a flight with the StanLib Global Select Fund, an offshore equity fund submanaged by JP Morgan Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Chatting now with Christo De Wit, country manager for Luno. Christo, appreciate the early morning time. You're here this morning to help make me smarter. Something I was completely unaware of, but became aware of over the weekend with the Trump and the Melania coin. These meme coins are actually being listed on the Solana or Ethereum blockchain. In the case of the two mentioned now, I think it was Solana. You don't have to go and create your own blockchain. You essentially use, I suppose, the smart contract sort of features embedded into these coins to launch your own meme coin.
That's right, Simon. When we look at both the Solana and the Ethereum blockchains, and actually many other blockchains that currently exist, they offer the ability for developers and people to develop their own coins. So you don't have to go out and develop your own blockchain. You simply use the blockchain technology that exists, the code that is available, and then list your cryptocurrency or your decentralized app using smart contracts or your NFT on that existing blockchain. And that's why both the Ethereum and Solana blockchains are so useful and what's driving that utility.
And markedly easy. I mean, I was scratching around over the weekend again. And I mean, I'm not much of a coder at all, but I found platforms and apps and the like that would frankly do most of the legwork for me.
No, absolutely. And I mean, it's not only limited to if we look at Solana and Ethereum. If we look at a Dogecoin, for instance, mm-hmm. It's something that's very similar to a Bitcoin, and it used most of the Bitcoin code with a few tweaks here and there, and then it launched. So because all of this is most likely open source, it's available to the public. We know that blockchain is all about transparency. It's out there. And with the advancement of technology, like you mentioned, it's so easy these days to list a coin or to create a coin in the cryptocurrency space. Now, that doesn't mean that when you create this coin using either the Solana or the Ethereum blockchain that, you know, it's going to get any traction. I think at the moment, there are more than 20,000 cryptocurrencies in existence. Wow. So it all depends on how you market it and how you make it available publicly.
And that is the key point. Anyone with a little bit of coding can create their own meme coin. But I need, if I can't get it onto an exchange such as yourselves or a Coinbase or whatever, I mean, it's largely just not there. Perhaps the trick here is getting it onto an exchange. And I imagine there are processes that exchanges such as yourself and others would go through sort of before you would just take the Simon Super coin.
No, absolutely. And I think there's, each exchange is very different and each exchange has a very different coin listing process. But I mean, it also goes into to show that what is the industry demanding, if there's significant demand in the crypto industry space. We saw over the last 3 to 4 years a significant maturing of the industry where cryptocurrencies are launched much faster. There's large scale adoption of these cryptocurrencies much faster. And also then there's a lot of regulatory change that enables this. So absolutely, I think for any cryptocurrency currency to gain any significant traction. It needs to be on an exchange, you know, to make it available publicly and easily accessible. And most exchanges, including Luna, have got a very thorough selection process to make sure that, you know, it ticks all the boxes and make sure that all due diligence has been done to make sure that, you know, it's listed correctly. But at the end of the day, the risk and the deciding factor still sits with the investors. You know, the investors utilizing these exchanges still need to decide whether or not this cryptocurrency fits their risk appetite, understanding fully, you know, if it's a mainstream token versus a meme coin, and what then is paid with that risk.
Is a meme coin inherently riskier? And I'm trying to think how my thinking is going here. But I mean, in essence, you know, a Solana or an Ethereum or I mean, you know, the granddaddy, a Bitcoin. We understand those. The Solana and the Ethereum are very much smart contract facilities. A meme coin really is just, well, I suppose it's what it says in the sticker. It is just meme. So it is going to be certainly, I would imagine, more volatile, and just by that process, potentially riskier.
I think, I mean, absolutely. A meme coin is a highly speculative asset. It comes paired with most likely a significant event. It ties to, latch onto a specific event. I think here with the Trump coin, maybe we're seeing the same thing. But then there's also other meme coins. And I think the best example here is Dogecoin, which was created as a meme to kind of poke fun at the industry way back when it was created. And it is now developed and morphed into a fully fledged mature cryptocurrencies. So a meme coin can start out, you know, as part of the hype with the social media following, but as time goes on, and only time will tell whether or not these meme coins mature. But as a pure meme coin, highly speculative, high volatility expected, risks associated with it, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't have its place, time and place in the cryptocurrency industry, right? So there's a lot of demand for it. The cryptocurrency investors and enthusiasts are quite excited about meme coins with, you know, the potential high gains that it has initially. So each has its time and place in the industry.
I know, 100%. I take your point on that. And it is one of the core things around crypto is I mean, I don't want to say less gatekeeping because we're seeing regulation coming in, but, you know, it is, I suppose it's a buyer beware. Does this listing the meme coins on Solana, on Ethereum, does that give any benefit to them beyond the fact that it is, well, this is what they're there for, that smart contract? I mean, beyond that, is there significant benefit to either of them?
So I think the first thing we need to consider is whether, you know, a developer decides to use either Ethereum or Solana or whatever blockchain. It depends on what they want to use. I think if we look at Solana specifically, one of the advancements of Solana is also in its consensus mechanism, where it doesn't only use proof of stake, it also uses proof of history, which is a little bit technical. We won't necessarily go into all of that. But what makes Solana quite interesting is that its transaction speeds are quite significantly faster than the Ethereum blockchain. The gas fees or the transaction fees that you pay are much lower. So that is then the deciding factor of which blockchain to use. Then the native cryptocurrency on that blockchain, for instance, Ethereum as the token or Solana as the token, when there's a significant cryptocurrency listed on that blockchain that gains significant traction, like we saw now with Trump coin, it also benefits the native cryptocurrency, because then there's more trust in that blockchain, there's more investors and people going into it. Therefore, we saw the past weekend significant surge in Solana as well, paired with, you know, the significant growth that we saw from the Trump coin being launched on Solana. So there are definite benefits when there's a coin listed on a blockchain that performs well. The native cryptocurrency on that blockchain also or usually will perform well.
Yeah, and you also answered my next question there, which was, is there much difference to it? Solana would seem to be perhaps a slightly more advanced between the two. Krista De Wit, our country manager, Luna South Africa, really appreciate the early morning time. Poll today, LinkedIn and Twitter. Have you bought a meme coin? I'm old school with crypto. I have Bitcoin. But have you bought a meme coin? And if you have, how did it go? I mean, did it make you vast amounts of it? Has it been a horror story? Perhaps you stay away from it. Have your vote. Have your say. LinkedIn and Twitter. Give you money, smoother returns for Stanlib Asset Management. The Stanlib Flexible Income Fund's agile investment process preserves and grows capital in all markets.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
Joining now with us, Sydney Fletcher, Senior Manager, Trust and Deceased Estate Tax Compliance at Tax Consulting SA. Sydney, appreciate the early morning. Local trusts, there seems to be an expectation in industry that starting in April of this year, SARS is going to start introducing administrative penalties for trusts' non-submission of tax returns. Is this a widespread problem? Certainly, it does seem to be something that maybe SARS has sort of not taken as hard a line as they could have.
Good morning, Simon. Yes, I think in the industry over the years, this has been the case. Although there was a lot of regulation around trust, the enforcement around that wasn't there. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, this was highlighted by the FATF findings a couple of years ago, where they said that the legal framework around preventing money laundering and terrorist funding is solid in South Africa. They don't have a problem with that. It's the administration and the governance around that laws that is the problem. And I think that brought the trust and the public benefit organizations to the fore and actually forced SARS' hand into getting regulation around that. So they have already not threatened, they have already indicated that they wanted the admin penalties to start in December 2024. Mm-hmm. It was postponed after they had some discussions with the registered controlling bodies, and that date has been extended until mid-April 2025.
And this really is, I mean, there's been a lot of reform around the trust space over the last couple of years. This is, I mean, this shouldn't come as a massive surprise to any trust. This really is just bringing it into the net and sort of bringing them up to the same standards and expectations of other taxpayers.
Yeah, that is evident by the particular changes that they've made. They've made the changes to comply with the Act, but it is a lot of the stuff isn't new that they're mm-hmm. asking. They are just enforcing it. And that is, and administratively, it's a lot, but the way they are doing it is we expect that administration additional burden will only last for about 1 or 2 years until they start pre-populating the info that we have submitted over the past month. Then that administrative burden should in fact slow down a bit. But we, from where we are sitting, we are seeing the need, we are seeing what they're trying to do, and it's a bit confusing as to why the industry is not picking up with getting trust compliance to the fore.
And there is, I mean, if I'm submitting a tax return, it's, I mean, we can, you know, varying degrees of simplicity. With trusts, there is a little bit more. For example, they want the minutes of trust meetings, resolutions passed. So there is a little more to the compliance process.
Yeah. What they've done is one of the big changes is the expanded reporting. Mm-hmm. So now it's compulsory for trust to submit your trust deed, letter of authorities, your beneficial ownership register. Mm-hmm. And with the example that you made with regards to the resolutions and minutes of trust meetings, what we normally did over the last, what we normally did is we would only submit the resolutions that was applicable, that spoke to, say for instance, that spoke to beneficiary distributions. SARS came out and said, no, because transactions within trust is resolution-based, the trustee must make that decision beforehand. Now you need every resolution and minutes of every meeting you need to send to SARS. Even when you resolve or the trustee has decided to take a loan, that resolution must also be sent off to SARS. So they have got one of the biggest changes is the expanded reporting that they've introduced into the trust space.
Gotcha. We'll leave it there. That's Sydney Fletcher, Senior Manager, Trust and Deceased Estate Tax Compliance at Tax Consulting SA. Appreciate the early morning. That's it for today. We're chatting with Nick Kunze yesterday from Sanlam Private Wealth, talking around Sasol, reports that it may list or sell its chemicals business. We haven't had, I mean, there was interviews with the CEO, but this is a process that's going to be slow, and certainly there's been nothing on since. We asked if you thought this would be a good value unlock for the company. About half said, yes, great idea. A third said, you're staying away regardless. The rest of you said, you weren't sure about it long term. And that certainly was Nick's concern. What's left in Sasol if you get rid of the chemical business? Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobuchle, Nicole Tolani, for you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Current trends and global economies.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.